Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life again on this fresh Sunday morning. Both of us coming from London in the UK, and very happy to be coming to this conversation out of the kerfuffle of our lives. We use this word kerfuffle a lot, Justin, I think, to describe all manner of hairiness and unpredictability and madness in our lives. Mostly me, though, because I have this little newborn and a 4-year-old in my life and a husband. So it's quite something getting here at 9 o'clock, which is why we're a bit late. And it's a proper joy to be here because, Justin, we have a poem. I think this is the first time this has ever had happened to us, where someone has gifted us, actually gifted us, particularly a poem, and then we brought it to Turning Towards Life. So I'm so happy, Justin, that you've chosen this source and happy to be doing this kind of wonderfulness of appreciating somebody who is part of our community and who has written something dedicated to you and I. It's very lovely. And as usual, we're going to read and be together in whatever emerges from reading this wonderful poem that we've been gifted and which exists in the world, not just for us, but for other people, but it's dedicated to us. And I'm just really happy to be here in the entering into the calm and sanity and straightforwardness of being with you, Justin. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Lizzie. Actually, I'm really appreciating that language that this conversation is intended to be a return to a certain kind of sanity, a certain kind of groundedness, a certain kind of truthfulness and care and love and attention and all of those things. So that feels like good language for this morning. Oh, it's very good to be here with you. And yes, Lizzie, so this week we have a poem, a source that was gifted to us, written for us by Lana Hechtman Ayers. And Lana, thank you so much. Really is. And one of the things that's very special about this poem is I know from what Lana said that this was written in response already to what Turning Towards Life is. It's like a sort of seeing and appreciation back into this conversation from somebody who's with us and alongside us, but also not in the in between of you and I, Lizzie. So I'm curious about the way these words help us reflect on not only on life itself, but also on what we've been up to these years too. So Lana, thank you. It's a great, great gift that you took such care and brought such skill in writing these words. And we know already from posting this in our Facebook group earlier in the week that other people have been moved and gladdened to read this already. So that's very lovely. So thank you again, Lana. And for all of you who maybe are joining us afresh for the first time, what we do every time, the practice is that we bring a source. It's like a fountainhead or a spring that then flows into the rest of the conversation, and we'll read this source from Lana twice, and then we'll talk, and who knows, whoever knows where we'll go, we'll find out. So this is called This Is Hard For Me. I'm not the broken mug in the sink, handle snapped off, fixable with a few dabs of quick glue. Nor am I the unmoored board sticking up on the walkway that a couple of steel nails and even-handed whacks with a hammer will resolve. I am not even the small pearl button popped off the white cotton shirt that simple needle and thread will neatly address. I am a person who needs you to listen. Simply listen, hear me say, this is hard for me. Not offer an answer or solution. Just caress my hand softly as a fine rain. A time for you to be silent and hold my struggle as you would a precious newborn already asleep in your arms.
Thanks, Justin. This Is Hard For Me by Lana Hechtman Ayers. I am not the broken mug in the sink, handle snapped off, fixable with a few dabs of quick glue. Nor am I the unmoored board sticking up on the walkway that a couple of steel nails and even-handed whacks with a hammer will resolve. I'm not even the small pearl button popped off a white cotton shirt. That simple needle and thread will neatly address. I am a person who needs you to listen. Simply listen. Hear me say, this is hard for me. Not offer an answer or a solution. Just caress my hand softly as a fine rain. A time for you to be silent and hold my struggle as you would a precious newborn already asleep in your arms.
Thank you, Lizzie. You know, it's interesting, one of the things that really struck me in reading and then hearing Lana's words was not the bit that seemed most obvious to me on the first reading it, which is Lana's invitation to all of us not to rush into fixing one another. Actually, what really, really struck me is how hard I have found it so many times to say, this is hard for me. And noticing in myself something I know very strongly, which is the ways in which I can trace this right back to being very little, the ways in which the identity which I took on, I mean, really from small, was making things okay for other people, making it all right, making sure nobody else got disturbed or hurt or upset, or dealing with things when people got, but mostly trying to avoid people getting hurt or upset. And in that way of being in the world, it is incredibly hard to say, I'm having a really hard time. This is really difficult. This is really, really painful. And I say all of this because for me, it makes Lana's invitation even more important. And there's something implied in what she writes that I want to draw some attention to, which is, it is the sort of the surface part of this is this invitation to one another. I need you to listen, to simply listen. But actually, in me, the most important part of it is the beginning of the line that says, hear me say. So it's actually, for many of us, it's quite difficult already to be the one who listens to another person without, you know, leaping in with, well, why don't you do this? And have you thought about this? And all those things that can be helpful to us at some point, but are very often too early, and very often we can work them out to a large part for ourselves. But I suppose what I'm noticing is that the quietening ourselves down so that the other person can speak is not sufficient. We also need to let ourselves be the person who can hear the other person say, this is hard for me. This is what I need for me to even to be able to say it, is to know that the person on the other side is committing themselves to really hearing me no matter what I say. Because it's already difficult enough for me to say that this is hard for me because I'm worrying about, you know, when I tell you, Lizzie, that I'm in trouble, so many parts of me, unless I'm onto it, and I've got much, much better at this over the years with your and other people's help, and I've really practiced this a lot, but there is so much in me that doesn't want to cause you the distress of hearing me admit to how much trouble I'm in. So not only do I need you to listen, I also really helps me if you can be the kind of person who will receive me, which is exactly what Lana's writing about. That in order for you to be able to receive me, you have to not know me as the broken mug who can be glued together and the unmoored board. But more than that, you actually have to be able to welcome me as the broken one that I am in that moment, not just sort of hold out for the moment when you're going to say the thing that you're going to say. And that's quite a profound thing, is to in order to welcome another person in their pain, in their difficulty, in their stuckness, we have to be able to find that in ourselves and to know how ordinary it is and how human it is. And then you can hold my struggle as you would hold a precious newborn already asleep in your arms.
There's a whole like tumble dryer of things happening as I listen. Oh. One little thread to pull on is this thing about, oh, I don't know how to say this. First of all, the really strong thing that's coming up for me is that we can turn up here, Justin, and not be polished and perfect and together and done or something to be able to do this. And I feel really grateful that I now know that in my life because of this. Like, the more genuine this is, the better. And whatever that genuine means is, the better. I'm really appreciating that. And somehow my life circumstances and this last line about the precious newborn asleep in your arms, it's like my reality in on a daily basis these days. And I know that Lana wrote this with some notion of what my life is like at the moment inside her understanding. And so I feel really grateful to be able to just come here with having just leapt out of the shower and come from an almighty kerfuffleage outside. And you know, I just feel really glad of that. And I really know I don't have to be, I don't have to be put together and I don't have to be done and ready and all those things. I'm really glad. And I think that's what makes Turning Towards Life a place that stands for hearing one another say, this is hard for me. Because it's really hard to say, this is hard for me when I'm met with a facade of perfection. What that does for me is it brings up my inadequacy and like, oh, I better be quiet about all my stuff because this person's got their life together and they're really not going to be interested in the kerfuffle I'm in. And so I think the invitation of Turning Towards Life and the I don't know what we're saying, the conversation we're trying to spread, I suppose, is one of openness and, like you said, humanness and ordinariness, to be in difficulty, in pain, in joy, in love, in kerfuffles of all kinds of orders, financial or emotional or bodily or whatever. We're a stand for this listening. And to be a stand for the listening, we have to be ourselves undone in some way. Like, for me to be buttoned up and give off an air of everything's just perfect and fine, and I'm going to manage my image to the nth degree so that I look great to you, what that tells me is, oh, well, all of this other stuff that's not that is not welcome here. So I feel like it's so beautiful that this is what's happening for me reading Lana's words as a person who's part of this conversation with us, that we, in order to say this is hard for me, the people around us have to be people who are willing to hear whatever that is, and how we're being and what we're like determines whether people will come forth with that or not. And so Justin, I know that the kind of emails we've received over the years from people who listen and the kind of vulnerability they've brought and the kind of openness that we get to be in receipt of so welcomely and delightfully is people's real lives. And that's such a grand and beautiful relief that we can be like that for each other, and that we can be a certain way that has that be what comes forth from others too. And, you know, we're not in direct conversation with people in this medium, Justin, we're bringing ourselves and then people are responding in their own and listening in their own ways and time and being. But we are a stand for this, for one another and other people in the world. And that's what this whole thing is about. So I'm really, really, really grateful right now that we show up like we do, and there's realness and ordinariness, and that people feel and we feel welcome to be what's real here, what's true here, rather than what's put together or managing some kind of imagery of what I want you to think of me or something.
I was thinking whilst you were talking, Lizzie, my kerfuffle is this thing where my chair keeps on going down because the stand up now. Gas cylinder and it's gone, and so gradually drift down whilst I'm talking to you. I was thinking as you were talking about all the things that get in the way of us being this with one another. So my mind was ranging across all kinds of different, you know, different things that we've often talked about. So I was thinking about how our wider culture, with it still, even in this time in the world where it feels like there are great changes happening and we become more and more aware of the many kinds of difficulties and uncertainty and all of that, we're still bombarded with images about perfection, how we can buy our way to perfection or work our way towards perfection, as if somehow we would, with the right combination of money, fame, and the latest product or whatever it was, or the latest book that we've read, education, we would become people without, who aren't broken inside as well as wonderful inside. And that story really doesn't help us because it sets up the illusion that the way for us to go is to be people who don't need to listen to one another, or to be people who listen to say, this is hard for me, in a way that the point of life is to escape things being hard. And I will say that fixing up things that are hard, that aren't unnecessarily hard, is a great and sacred task. But there's no way of avoiding there being much hardness in our lives. So we're sort of misled by that. And then I was thinking, maybe this is just me, but I was thinking about all my so many of my educational experiences where what was prized was getting everything right.
Mm-hmm.
I was quite good at getting everything right. You know, some of us fit into that system. You know, I fitted into that system. So, and then of course I want to take care of other people. So I want to be competent. I want to know when you tell me that something's hard, I want to know what to do. I want to be able to tell you I know what to do. There's all of those moves inside. And then I was thinking about how all of those moves just make us try to be superior to one another, even if we don't feel superior. Even if when you come to me and you say, this is hard for me, I'm completely lost and bereft and have no idea what to do. It's quite tempting to go, well, I'll get it myself together and I'll now be the one who knows what to do. That will make me feel better and then I can take care of you. So it can have very, very good intention. But in the end, what it does is it makes me superior to you, trying to be superior to you. And I remember listening to the wonderful writer Francis Weller talking about grief, and he was talking about cultures in the world where when you're really in grief, what you do is you put everything down and you go and you sit in the ashes for a year. And everyone knows that that's what you're doing, is that, you know, Liz is sitting in the ashes, or Justin is sitting in the ashes, or where we have ways of publicly signaling to one another that this is hard. You know, we make it social and cultural, and that's the thing that we've really been robbed of. And in my own culture, in Jewish tradition, I've just been in this with some dear friends this week who were, a member of their family died, where there are mourning rituals where you publicly allow yourself to show that you're in grief and that you don't rush into the next thing. So I think that we collectively, to the extent that any of us who are talking or listening to this conversation had taken from us public rituals where we can show I'm broken right now, I'm in difficulty right now, we've lost a way to signal to the world that could then be heard, that everyone would orient themselves around us. Like if we all know that you're in difficulty, we can all do what Lana does. Like we know that it's not the time to try and fix you up. We know that it's the time just to listen to you. We know that it's time to bring you cups of tea or, you know, a a lasagna and put it on your doorstep or whatever it is. And in the absence of those, we really need this reminder from Lana, which is that we might not know that another person is in a "this is hard for me" time. Can we put down our own, the sort of sense of superiority that makes us feel better? Oh, I know what to do. Can I, in order to really hear you say it's hard for you, I have to be able to acknowledge that it's also hard for me. Or it could be tomorrow or in 5 minutes, that I'm just no different to you. And that's what human life is like. And that's one of the reasons I so appreciate words like this and then conversations like this, Lizzie, because if we don't have collective rituals for this, we have to be the ones, really helps for us to be the ones who have personal ritual for it. And here's a ritual that Lana's invited us into. Don't offer an answer or solution. Caress my hand softly, actually or metaphorically, as a fine rain. Let you be silent, hold my struggle, and treat you as a precious newborn already asleep in your arms. That is a ritual that we really, really need. And I realize in sort of working this through and saying this to you that what Lana's, these words offer us is a practice we could take up, could think of it as a practice, as a way of sort of approaching one another. We could even approach one another with this in mind always, and then find out that it actually isn't the time. We don't need to stay quiet for so long. There's stuff to do together, or there is a, you know, a mug to be fixed or something. But if we could approach with this kind of grace and gentleness, approach one another in this kind of humility with one another, we might find ourselves more able to be in the life's kerfuffles. You know, the baby who's crying and needs attention and big grief. And actually, I just dropped my phone, you know, in the sink, and all of the, you know, the whole scale of things. It would be a very respectful and kind way to approach one another.
So you're talking, Justin, I'm reminded of something that happened yesterday with my nephew, who's 13, and he was in some difficulty. And I noticed all the parts of me, like you're saying, that I wanted to take it away from him. I wanted to fix him. I wanted him to be okay. I didn't want him to suffer. I wanted to provide some solution to him or whatever. And on reflection, what I can see is that that was all happening, and I didn't do anything about that inner happening. I didn't follow any of those impulses. What I followed was telling him that I understood, and then saying, can you say some more about what it's like right now for you? Things like that. And also telling him that I understood, you know, that that's happened to me before. Like, I felt this sense of injustice in my life and with these people who he knows. And it's really hard. And I'm really sorry. And I'm right here. And what I think it takes for me not to follow those inner impulses to save and fix and change the situation in some way is a discipline. Actually, it's like an inner discipline to say I'm not going to do that with somebody I really love, and anybody, frankly. But I think for me, the closer people are, the harder this job is. To not go down those roads, what's necessary is a kind of holding the person in front of me as if they are this precious newborn already asleep in my arms. And I didn't know that that's what was happening until just now when you were talking about it. And this line is here. It's relating to somebody with faith and a really deep knowledge of who they actually really, really are, which is not this piece of suffering. It might include that, but that's not all of them. And there's way more to my nephew than this current difficulty that he's in. And when I remember that and can be in relationship to that at the same time as what's arising also being true and really holding it preciously, not like throwing it away or something, or ignoring it, but simultaneously holding the who-ness of the person, then there's this kind of like faithful next to me-ness happening, that I can be alongside him and not try and change it, but be my body and my presence being there in it with him somehow is a very comforting, good thing that allows him to know that it's going to come through to something else soon. And we need to sit here and we need to let it happen and we need to be with it until it doesn't want to be here anymore and something else arises and we can go and have dinner or something. So I'm really appreciating the kind of the chance to reflect on an actual thing of letting him say, this is hard for me, letting me have all my inner impulses and noticing how I didn't rush down any of the roads, and also what makes it possible to not rush down the roads, which is really seeing people and knowing the kind of the breadth and depth and wonder of who they are, into which and out of which these experiences, these human experiences are happening. So I'm feeling very grateful, and also, Justin, there's a particular set of boundaries around auntieing and uncling, I think, that I'm currently feeling very in receipt of, which is the gift that my nephew was to me yesterday, was to show me that this is possible, that there's a connection, that's a certain set of boundaries. I'm not his parent, but I love him, like, with big shards of parentness in there. But I'm also able to agree with him, and that doesn't come up against any kind of rules of the house that need to be followed or something. I've got a very different position, and I'm really grateful that I can do that. And what a gift that is to me, to be in that role as an auntie to some people in the world.
Lizzie, one of the things that's really striking me as you're talking is that, as well as all the other things that we both are, parents and friends and colleagues and people's children and siblings, and you know, we're all in all of those roles, and we're also coaches. And I know that in the way that we do coaching, there's also the point at which we say, here's an invitation that I could make to you, here's another way of seeing this, here's a way of observing this you might take up, here's a way of practicing you might take up, which might bring about a different orientation to the life that you're in or the particular situation you're in. So I was holding all of that as you were speaking, because I realized that it seemed important to me that there's also a question about timing, and that there's also a question of invitation. So sometimes I come to you, and what I really need is everything that we've been talking about. In fact, mostly that's always the first place to start. I was really moved by what you said about saying to your nephew, about saying, no, gosh, that's difficult. And how is this for you? And knowing in yourself the places in you that have been in a similar kind of difficulty. And then I got thinking there might be a time. And of course, this is what happens with coaching, where what the person is saying is, and I really would like your help.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think that's one of the big confusions that often when people are learning to coach have at the start, is we can get into a kind of binary thing. Either I'm jumping in to try and help you when you are far from being the person who's really asking for that.
Mm-hmm.
You really just want to be the person who's listening. Or then I go, no, I couldn't say something that would be helpful to you because we've got too strongly held onto the pole that Lana's inviting us into, the one that's often missing, that's so important, that there comes a point where I might say to you as a friend, as a coach, as a parent, as an aunt, as a, you know, okay, I'm really hurting and I don't know what to do. It keeps going. I'm really stuck. I'm really confused. I will you help me? And at that point where there's a will you help me, then there's an opportunity for something that comes alongside everything that we've been talking about. Because we might be able to see things, and we might be able to say things, and we might be able to make invitations that help a person see their relationship to the difficulty that they've been in. It's almost certainly rarely going to be let's just stick this broken handle on with a bit of glue is a much more sophisticated response. I suppose I wanted to honour in our conversation that we can also, there's another kind of profound help we can be to one another when we help one another, when we bring new language and bring new ways of observing and bring new practice. That comes. But it really, really helps for us to be sensitive to whether we've been invited and when the time is. And when we've been invited and when it's the right time, we can then be great gifts to one another. But when we are uninvited and when it's the wrong time, we can be great trouble to one another by bringing what we see.
Strikes me as, Justin, that we're very rarely invited. In the scheme of things, of like how many people we meet every day or whatever we're doing as ordinary humans in the world, you know, whether we're a coach or not a coach, you know, whether we're in relationship with people in a particular one-to-one way or not, the majority of people in the street and in our families and whatever, we're not in that particular set of permissions. And when they come, it's very precious. And it strikes me that if we are the kind of people, like we were, like just coming back to what we were saying before, that around whom that this is hard for me can happen, at least it allows there to be the possibility of those permissions being granted in both directions. Because it just doesn't, it's not how the world rolls. And so for us to be, you know, in reflection of this thing, turning towards life, we're putting a kind of marker in the sand or something that says, this is what we stand for. This is who we are. We are a presence around whom a this is hard for me can be said, can happen. And of course, there's loads of people standing for this, and I love them and appreciate every single one that I come across. I just am so grateful. But that we can somehow create more, even more of a ripple effect of other people, more people being the invitation for this is hard for me to be said, feels really, really, really important. So I'm feeling very grateful that there is also this kind of intersection between this set of permissions as a coach and just of being a normal human being who isn't in a role at all of that kind, but is a brother or a sister or a husband or a wife or a partner or a dad or, you know, anything, any of the roles we take up, we can also bring this kind of presence and this kind of openness and this kind of vulnerability, both around our own lives, but also in service of other people's lives. And those things aren't separate from each other.
A wonderful place to end. Lizzie, thank you. Thank you to you for being one of these people around whom it's possible to say, this is hard for me, and I know that you are that for many. It's lovely to be in this conversation with you, and thank you, Lana, for the gift of your words and the opening into conversation that they are. It's a great treasure to... It's always lovely, isn't it, Lizzie, when we're reading words that are by someone we in some way know or feel connected to. It's a different kind of conversation. So very grateful, Lana. Thank you to all of you who are with us. You are very, very welcome to tell other people about this. If you want to support us, head over towards turningtowards.life and you can find a little support us link and you can see how you can make a contribution our way that supports us in doing this work. If you want to share this with other people, if you'd like to leave us a review on, particularly on Apple Podcasts. I don't think anyone's left a review for a long time, and they help. They're lovely when they come because they really help spread this around, and we know how people benefit from being in this conversation. Or if you simply just want to turn up and listen when you want to listen, that's also just fine. It's really, really good to know that you're there alongside us. So we are finishing for this week, and all being well, we'll be back again, same time, same place next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.